I'm someone who wakes up so early and I highly value my sleep. And maybe you're thinking, hey, I eat clean, I crush my workouts, I take my vitamins, but I still wake up feeling completely exhausted. From your portfolio to your career to your diet and fitness routines, you may be overlooking a fundamental driver of your mood, patience, and productivity. Sleep quality. Even 7 or 8 hours in bed won't leave you restored if poor sleep quality is silently sabotaging your daily performance, or if a partner has mentioned your snoring and disrupted breathing. If you're tired of guessing why you're constantly drained, Sleep Doctor offers a clear, guidance-driven path forward. The home sleep study is a simple alternative to a sleep lab and can be completed in your own bed over one night. It gives you clinical-grade insights to pinpoint the exact root cause of your fatigue without requiring an uncomfortable, expensive stay hooked up to wires in a sterile medical clinic, delivering real answers and practical next steps so you can show up fully every day. Visit sleepdoctor.com to take the first step toward waking up rested and ready. Now accepting most insurance. Check and see if your insurance is eligible. Gang, something so cool has happened. I have my very own robot, and it's called Matic. I'm going to make the financial case, but let me start by saying this thing is incredible. It's the first intuitive cleaning robot designed and assembled in America for families. So let me do some numbers. Maybe you're paying a house cleaner by the hour. That's real money, every single month, forever. Matic is a one-time cost. Spread over 2 years, it comes out to about $2 a day. For that, you get hours back every week and floors that are actually vacuumed and mopped, the kind you can walk on barefoot. And this is not one of those things that blindly bumps into walls. It sees your space the way you do, so it cleans it exactly how you want. Point at a mess and say, Matic, clean this. And it goes. Nobody has to learn an app, not your kids, not your parents. It's rated 4.9 out of 5 by the families who own it. To get your Matic, go to maticrobots.com. Right now, go to maticrobots.com/Jill to get a year of free HEPA bags with your purchase today. A $96 value at no cost to you. That's maticrobots.com/Jill. Welcome to the Jill on Money Show. It is Monday, September 7th. It is Labor Day, and we are here with a special Labor Day edition of Jill on Money. Now, it's special for a couple of reasons. The primary reason it is so special is that we have a special guest with us. His name is Mike Quincy. He is like the car specialist at Consumer Reports. Actually, what I should say is he is the former car guy at Consumer Reports. We are recording this as he winds down his multi-decade career there. The second reason why this is a special episode is that we're also releasing this as a video. So if you would like to check out what beautiful Mike Quincy looks like, you can go to our website, jillonmoney.com. We'll have a link there, right? We'll have a link in the show notes, or just go to YouTube and search for Jill on Money, and you'll be able to see this. So let me, without further ado, bring in the very famous Mike Quincy, who has been with us for many years, I think probably since the radio show. So that would put you in like the 15-year time horizon. Mike, how many years did you work at Consumer Reports?
I've been with Consumer Reports for almost 34 years, starting in the Yonkers office in New York and then being lucky enough to work full-time at Consumer Reports Test Track in Colchester, Connecticut, where I've been for the last 25 years. And yes, I remember the CBS studios from many years ago. I'd come in for the New York Auto Show and stop in and see you guys and do a segment with you. And it's funny, you're talking about this is the Labor Day thing. It's really the non-Labor Day for me.
That's right. Celebrating Labor Day in a different way. So before we do car stuff, you spent 34 years at one company, which is pretty rare these days. And I'm wondering, you know, you're in the twilight, how do you feel?
I feel mixed. I'm basically retiring. I wasn't the best part is I wasn't forced out. They didn't say, "Oh, Quincy, you're not good anymore. You're just taking up space. You know, here's a cake. Go away." My coworkers, my boss, like, "We really don't want you to go." But the situation came about, and everything kind of fell into place. So I think I'm making the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
This is the job that I always wanted. So if you remember as a kid, you were given the assignment, what do you want to be when you grow up? And some people said, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a lawyer, I want to be a teacher, I want to be a firefighter, whatever. I wanted to write about cars. So study the auto industry, and I am so freaking lucky that I've been able to do it for as long as I have.
It's incredible. And, you know, you've done it at a place that is kind of the gold standard and has done an incredible job. And obviously, under pressure, I mean, I don't think I'm telling any tale out of school, which is that Consumer Reports, which is based on a subscription model for the magazine and then the website, there's a ton of competition with free stuff out there. The difference is that when you have somebody reviewing a car and they come from Consumer Reports, it's like the known quality of that and the discipline and the rigor that you bring and your colleagues bring to your jobs, whether it's reviewing a car or a dishwasher, it's pretty amazing. And so there's a sadness for me that, like, I really want Consumer Reports to continue in the same way that I want, you know, the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times to continue, that you want there to be the standard bearer of what good journalism really is. And you guys do service journalism like no one else.
I really appreciate you calling Consumer Reports the gold standard, because I feel that we are. And imagine, well, it's sometimes there's all these like local newspapers that come around, and maybe there's a restaurant review or a movie review, and the person writing it loves everything. You know, this restaurant's great, it's great, it's great. And Consumer Reports doesn't pull any punches. So if a car has flaws, and every car has flaws, we're going to point out what about the car is not so hot. And that is not the case for every automotive review or any product review or anything like that, because they might be worried about advertising or things, stuff like that. Since Consumer Reports doesn't take advertising, we buy our own test cars, we don't have that fear. So being able to really tell the truth about cars has been a real privilege, and we work hard to serve the general public.
It's been amazing, and it's an amazing ride for us to be able to be there with you. So, you know, listen, there's no doubt that I might be able to, like, still text you when I'm in a dealership. Anyone listening or watching this, you should, you know, full disclosure, I have completely exploited my relationship with Mike over these years. I have literally sent him a text from a dealership, is this a good deal? And because everyone who listens for a while knows that Mark and I are the worst car consumers in some ways, or the best. And so I have a 2014 Mercedes GLK that I bought used, and I called Mike, I texted Mike from the dealership. I'm like, should I do this? Here's the number. And it wasn't even that much. It was like, I don't know, it was like 30 grand or something. And you're like, just do it. Just do it. Pull the trigger. Do it. And then you also said to me, like, if it's going to be a lemon, which it could have been, because you remember you said to me, like, sometimes those cars are not so hot. Like, it'll be revealed quickly. And it's been, and here I am. I still have it. It says like 145,000 miles or something. And then I have a 2015 Mini Cooper that we bought brand new, which has does not yet have 10,000 miles on it. So what am I going to do? So I only point this out to you that this past year was the first year where I was like, uh-oh, I think the big car could, like, a few things are starting to happen. A few things. So I'm going to represent the person who drives the car into the ground. At what point should I say, okay, done, next year, the year after, what amount of money would I have to spend on the car where you're like, eh, not worth it? Like, is it a dollar amount? Is it less than a certain amount? Like, what do you think?
I think there's a couple ways that you can look at this. If the vehicle is running okay, and isn't costing you a lot of money every month, like you said, you continue to drive it into the ground. That's the cheapest way to spend your automotive dollars. If, however, every month there's a big bill and there's all this downtime where the car can't be driven because it has to be fixed, or they're waiting for parts, then that's a consideration. Another part to think about is you get a bill, and it's the bill is higher than the worth of the car. So if the car is worth $5,000 and your bill is $7,000,
yeah,
that's usually an indication that you're just pouring money into this unnecessarily, and it's time to go. But a lot of times people say to me, you know, I've got a car, it's got 100,000 miles, 150,000 miles, I need a new car. And the first thing I say is, wait a minute, how is it running? And they say, well, it's running fine. I said, is it costing you a lot of money every month? They said, no, not at all. I said, keep driving. Just keep driving it. I mean, it's the best decision economically. You know, however, there is one downside. If you're driving a 10-year-old car, a 15-year-old car, a 20-year-old car, you're dealing with 20-year-old technology.
Mm-hmm.
So modern cars have more standard safety features. Modern cars get better gas mileage overall. Modern cars have cleaner exhaust emissions. Modern cars have a lot more amenities that you will quickly become used to and learn to like. So there's that consideration only. But since this is Jill on Money,
yeah,
the best way to save money is to do exactly what you do, buy a good used car and drive it into the ground.
Okay. So the thing that we always like to talk about is, like, you always talk about the technology. So I want to go from the old combustible engine to, let's go to EVs, because we went through like an EV mini boomlet when there was a lot of money available. You could get this cool tax credit. Now that's kind of rolled off. We can't get the tax credit. But Mike, I understand that one of the issues that's kind of interesting is that some of the people who got that tax credit who were leasing, they love to buy their car off lease, but it's so much more expensive than they had bargained for. And so where are we in the EV market? Oftentimes people go to these dealerships and the salesperson's like, you can buy the EV, but you're going to pay up for it. You're going to pay up to have the EV, and it's still probably a more financially prudent decision. I'm not saying you're gonna, like, you feel good environmentally, whatever, but like financially it still does make more sense to either do a hybrid or combustible engine. Is that true in your opinion?
It depends on the circumstance. It depends what kind of driving you do. It depends how big your family is. It depends on a lot of things. And regarding the car's cost after the lease, since EVs are still sort of in their infancy, maybe, you know, they really become mainstream over the last 10 or 15 years, I'm guessing the leasing companies weren't sure what the residual values were going to be after the lease. So what we have seen here at Consumer Reports Test Track is we tested a number of high-end EVs.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about real expensive Audis, Mercedes-Benzes, BMWs, Teslas, and after we were done testing them and publishing them, and then we hold on the cars for about another 6 to 8 months, just in case there's an issue, the manufacturer doesn't like our test results and we have to look at our test car, we go to sell them. So before we sell them, we're looking at what the kind of numbers are on both a retail and a wholesale level. And we found that these high-end EVs just sank like a stone.
Really?
The values just absolutely bottomed out. I mean, losing maybe 50% of how much we spent to buy these things. And so I think the EV market has cooled a little bit, probably even since the last time you and I spoke. I think a lot of manufacturers are rethinking their EV approach. There was a push a while back about car companies saying, we're going to be all electric by 2030 or
something. Yeah, they're all over that. That's done.
Some random date. And now they're kind of walking that back. It's like, well, maybe not. And I, from a manufacturing standpoint, I think EVs are still expensive to design. They're expensive to build. And I don't think they're very profitable for the car companies. And so if you take away some tax incentives or tax breaks, whatever, to get them to in people's hands, it can be a tough sell. Now, I like EVs. I think they are really quite good for a lot of people. We actually have one in our house. We bought a Kona EV. That's an ex-Consumer Reports test car. That's about 200 miles of range. But my wife works in town. I mean, only like 3 or 4 miles away. and she's rarely driving out of state and stuff like that. And my oldest son, who loves cars and was actually really smart, he one day he said, you know, Dad, we should get a small, inexpensive EV. And lo and behold, I looked at the cars that were for sale at our track, and there was the Kona EV. So we struck a deal, we bought it, and you know, the cost of operation is electricity, and the last time I checked, electricity is still less money than gasoline. So for us, it's working out right now, but you know, let's talk again in 10 or 5 years, I don't know.
So if I'm looking at those high-end EVs, because we have very sophisticated, wealthy people who are usually tuning into this show. We'll go top to bottom. Are you still, for Jill, thinking, and for some of us, like that Hyundai Ioniq, is that still high on your list? Are there others that have supplanted that? What are you thinking for now?
Well, I still like the Hyundai Ioniq 5. I think it's a nice size. It fits a lot of what people are looking for. It's easy to drive. They also have larger ones. They have the Ioniq 9, which is like a three-row EV. And if you have a family and whatnot, that's definitely something to look at. We tested a Lucid. We've tested some Rivians. Those are super expensive. So you might want to look into possibly a used one. But one word of caution, Rivians have been just awful for reliability. Consumer Reports sell reliability surveys, and Rivian came in dead last.
Get out of here!
So, but this, it's a relatively new manufacturer, and people might not like to hear this, but the legacy manufacturers have figured out mass production and reliability a lot better than the quote unquote startups.
Yeah,
we're also pretty big on the Tesla Model Y. That's turned out to be pretty reliable. It did well in Consumer Reports testing. But with a Tesla, you have to be comfortable with some wonky controls, everything being controlled in the center screen. There's definitely a learning curve. But for people who are tech heads, they might want to look into it. I will caution your high-end audience. Teslas are not the status symbols they used to be, shall I say.
Yeah, you have to have you have to deal with the Elon of it all. That people are like, ew, I hate him or whatever. So that's a fact.
Well, yeah, it spawned a whole industry. You drive around, you see Teslas, you see bumper stickers that said, I liked this car before Elon went crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or something like that.
So how about those, when you mention, a lot of people have Audis or Mercedes or the German car makers, how has their journey into EV, what does that look like for them? Is it an afterthought? I mean, I always think that the European car makers should be ahead of us because their gas prices are so much more expensive than ours. But are they?
These are companies. We talk about the Germans, the Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volkswagen. These are companies built their reputation on engineering and not as much just flash and whatnot. And to answer your question, some of the EVs we've tested from these manufacturers were sort of retrofitted. The BMW i5, for example, was basically a 5 Series that they turned into an EV. Now, it turns out it did really well in our testing. It's super fast. It has a lot of that BMW driving qualities that you look for. But also, BMW has designed EVs from scratch, from the ground up as well. So there isn't just one way to do it. I don't think it's fair to say if you take a current vehicle platform and you convert it into EV, it automatically is going to be bad, because that's definitely not the case in Consumer Reports testing.
So by now, I'm doing this big charity bike ride. And one of the ways I try to set myself up for success is I lay my clothes out before I go out early in the morning. I know what route I'm going to take. It's that act of preparation that can really make all the difference. So many aspects of your financial life are kind of the same. You want to be prepared. You want to make sure when there's no pressure or your daily grind gets in the way, that you're dealing with the things that are important to you. So maybe it's time to set aside a little bit of time so that you can think about your life insurance. And Policy Genius makes the process simple. Policy Genius isn't an insurance company. They're an online marketplace that lets you compare free side-by-side quotes from top insurers in minutes. Their licensed team handles the heavy lifting, from answering tricky questions to completing paperwork, ensuring you get the exact coverage you need without any guesswork. With Policy Genius, you can find 20-year life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. Head to policygenius.com to compare life insurance quotes from top companies and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. Do you ever receive a text or an email that addresses you by your full name and all of a sudden has your previous home address? This makes me realize just how much of my personal information is sitting out there for anyone to see. In the age of AI, we're all vulnerable, and taking action to protect yourself is essential. That's why you should consider using Delete Me. They do the heavy lifting by removing your details from hundreds of data broker websites so you don't have to. Delete Me isn't a one-time thing. They're constantly monitoring and removing information you don't want on the internet. The New York Times Wirecutter named them their top pick for data removal services. Stay smart out there. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. Now at a special discount for our listeners, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to join DeleteMe.com/JillOnMoney and use promo code JillOnMoney at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to JoinDeleteMe.com/JillOnMoney and enter code JillOnMoney at checkout. That's JoinDeleteMe.com/JillOnMoney, code JillOnMoney. Is it fair to say that if somebody has been just driving a gas guzzler for all these years and they, listen, $4 gas nationally gets you thinking about this, but you're kind of scared of the EV thing. We have seen a surge in the hybrid market. Is that a safer approach? Just like I think last time you were on with us, you said, you know, the good thing about hybrid is that it's just more experience with it, that you know, they've been around longer, especially for the Toyota Lexus part of the world. How do you feel about the hybrid market in comparison to the EV market?
Super, super strong, feeling great about hybrids, and as well as plug-in hybrids and Consumer Reports reliability surveys. That they are doing gangbusters for good reliability. You can trust hybrids coming from Toyota, Lexus, Honda. These are manufacturers that have been at it for a long time, and they've got really good at it. For most people, a hybrid is awesome. I mean, people think it's boring, but your basic Toyota Camry is super reliable, gets phenomenal fuel economy. I'm a road trip guy. And it is, and one of my favorite road trip cars of all time, because you're getting over 600 miles on a tank of fuel. Now, if you're not driving that far, some of the plug-in hybrids are fantastic. We're in the midst of testing the redesigned RAV4 plug-in. Toyota is claiming about 50 miles of all-electric driving, which is pretty robust for a plug-in. You have usually good Toyota controls that are easy to figure out. You don't have to have someone looking over your shoulder when you're driving the seat. This is how you do this, this is how you do that. It's one of those cars you can really figure out pretty quickly. We're not done testing yet, but so far it's pretty promising. So okay. Not everyone needs an EV.
Yeah, exactly. That is true. So last time we were talking about, you said Toyota, Lexus, Honda. We have another year of data with that. I, of course, once you put this, implant this in my brain, and then you start to see that car that Mike talks about on the road like crazy. So what I notice is traveling, you know, back and forth on the Long Island Expressway every weekend, I just see a ton of those Lexus hybrid NX, XX, I don't remember which one it was, 350. And my big question to you is, how do I get my wife over the fact that she hates the front grill of that car? And she wanted me to ask you specifically. She left this morning and she said, can you ask Mike why that grill, that front grill, is so ugly? Does it serve a some purpose, because it does look like, kind of makes the car look angry. I mean, it looks better in a lighter color, but we're so sensitive to it. Like, once you set it, and then she's like, ew, I hate the front of that car. And she's kind of right. So what's going on with that?
Well, she's not the first person that's complained about the styling of the Lexus. It is kind of has the, you know, the big, you know, the wide mouth bass approach. I mean, it's this gaping mouth on it.
Yeah.
I really like the Lexus NX hybrid as well as the RX hybrid. The RX.
Which one's the bigger one?
The RX.
Okay.
Because they drive nice. Mm-hmm. They are quiet. They're comfortable. They have good seats. They have pretty good controls. They have an elegant interior. Lexus does a nice job making their, you know, high-end buyers feel special. And they just hold together really well. I have a lot of confidence in Lexus models. And the hybrids have, you know, benefit, obviously, from all the experience that the parent company, Toyota, has been perfecting for about 25 years. Mm. So I don't know. I would not. I'll confess. There are some cars that have styling that I can't get past. I get that. Mm. And cars are emotional, and how it looks is important to a lot of people, including myself. I would go with an NX hybrid and not really stress about it because it's not as ugly as a lot of cars. But I do understand where she... Well, listen, I understand where she's coming from. I would be absolutely nuts if I said, look, I don't see... Why do you think this is ugly?
From the back, it's fine. But the front is kind of ugly. It kind of is. It's rough. Anyway, what's...
Yeah, everybody has different, you know, hot buttons.
Well, does that mean...
But
when you say... Wait a second. But if you say Toyota Lexus, does that mean Honda Acura? And that you have a shot at an Acura hybrid that is... built on the Honda. Isn't Honda and Acura the same?
Yeah, Acura doesn't do a lot of hybrids.
So oh, they don't.
You go with a Honda CR-V hybrid, an Accord hybrid. Mm. That's probably the better bet. Honda is good at hybrids, but they're not as committed throughout their product line like Toyota is. Mm-hmm. And I also failed to mention, Hyundai also has a lot of good hybrids as well.
The Honda Wait a minute. If I'm not going to... What is the analogous one to the Ioniq 5 as a hybrid?
I don't think there really is one. Mm. But I would look at the Hyundai Tucson hybrid, and I would look at the Hyundai Santa Fe hybrid. The Santa Fe got a big restyling last year. Kind of looks like a Land Rover. Mm-hmm. It's kind of squared off and kind of boxy-ish, but I really like it. It has a lot of room inside. It's great controls. Again, that tremendous cruising range of about 600 miles. I'm a big fan of the Hyundai Santa Fe hybrid.
Okay, now let's go to the big question that you always really do such a good job explaining, which is, kid is gotten a license or going to college. For a long time, you have said, don't just give them your old SUV. Don't give them that old Bronco. By the way, Broncos are all over the place. It's crazy. Make your pitch for getting the kid the boring car, please.
Okay. So, again, taking into account your audience and, you know, the various area codes they live in.
Yes.
I would say to some well-heeled parents, get your child a Honda Accord, a new Honda Accord, a Toyota Camry, a Honda Civic, a Toyota Corolla. Get them a sedan. Not only are they easier to drive, they're easy to park, they have better handling, they have good braking distances, they have all the standard safety features you want. They have good reliability, good fuel economy. If you can afford this, put them in a brand new car, because your inexperienced drivers will benefit from the most safety that you can afford. Forget about the glitz and the glamour. If your kid says, I don't want a brand new Honda Accord.
Yeah.
I want a Porsche. Okay, well, first
Not
of all,
happening.
You're getting a brand new car. What the heck is wrong with you? generally speaking, sedans are better in emergency handling situations way better than SUVs. Do not get your kid a pickup truck, despite how much they might be saying they want one. The sedans are lower to the ground. They handle better. Lower center of gravity. That's the way to go here.
And what about that argument also of like people piling into the car? That was the other thing you said, that like when kids get into accidents and they're in these cars, it just, they tend to have more people in the car when they're the big SUVs. Is that right still?
Right. The data shows that when teenage drivers have other people in the cars, especially their friends, the rate of accidents go up. Hmm. And I think it depends from state to state, but some states don't allow teenage drivers to have other, you know, other than a family member in their car while they're driving. It's just driven by data. It isn't to pick on anyone.
Yeah.
But I mean, so that's really something to think about. And if you know, parents that are sending their kids through driver education, a lot of this data will come out, hopefully. And parents can also look this stuff up on their own. I mean, up to a few years ago, the number one cause of death for people under 21 was car accidents. Mm-hmm. And that's been usurped by gun violence, unfortunately.
Eesh.
But it used to, you know, still cars kill a lot of teenagers. And so, you know, as parents, you do anything to keep your kids safe and do the research to find out why your child shouldn't be driving around with three or four of their teenage friends in the car, why they shouldn't be driving a pickup truck and whatnot. And don't get them a really fast car like a Subaru WRX or something like that, which will take your insurance rates and drive them absolutely through the roof. But if you have a lot of money, you probably don't care about that. But again, the power of the WRX is way too much for an inexperienced driver. I wouldn't do it.
I like that. I mean, I think that's so important. I love the idea of like the uncool car is like, you know, like just, it's okay. Or don't get a car. That's okay. You don't get a car. That'd be fine. So Mike, when you look at the industry right now, just overall, just like to have you weigh in on, you know, the trends that you think are going to keep going. Like we may have seen this EV pop because of the tax credit, but now we're seeing hybrid demand start to rise, especially with gas prices up. What other trends are you seeing that you think are important for consumers to understand?
I think with the average cost of a car hovering, I think it's around $50,000.
Yeah, it's 50.
People are clamoring for inexpensive cars. And luckily, a number of Consumer Reports top picks are under 30, like a Subaru Forester, Subaru Crosstrek, a Toyota Camry. So there are some new cars out there that are, you know, relatively affordable. But what this is doing is it's putting a lot of pressure on the used car market. Mm. So used cars, the prices are high, the supply is low because there's a lot of demand because people can't afford a $50,000 car. So I'm wondering, and I don't know this to be sure, but I'm wondering if car companies are going to rethink the lower end. Everyone wants to have, you know, luxury cars and all the gadgets on them and whatnot, the prestige labels. I'm wondering if there is a market for cars that are a little bit smaller, a little more affordable, a little bit better on gas. Now, I'm not saying we're going to go back to the Geo Metros of the 1980s or something like that. We have a little three-cylinder engine and it's riding around in a tin can. But I'm wondering, you know, is there a market for small cars and sedans? Because there aren't really many of them out there.
Right. And I mean, the cost of these cars, which I understand, like, so the economics behind it, I totally get. I get that parts and costs and materials went up, especially after we had tariffs. I understand demand after, you know, amid the pandemic. But I also understand that people like to drive bigger cars, and that's also driving the price up. So, I mean, in some respects, it's like if consumers want those lower end cars, they kind of have to like buy the lower end cars. They have to, right? They, you know, you have to have enough of them to do that. So if you are looking right now for, you know, I got a car with 190,000 miles. It's on its last legs. I commute. We hear from people a lot who have long commutes, so maybe a little car isn't perfect. Is that a Camry? Is that an Accord? Is that like the, if you just don't want a flashy car, this is like the one?
A long commute is where hybrids shine. Mm. Because okay. when you're, you know, I've been on the Long Island Expressway. I've been in and out of New York City most of my life. Mm. I know what traffic is. I also live near Boston, so that's always a picnic.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're driving a Camry or an Accord hybrid, and you're creeping along in traffic, the hybrid has these battery packs, and they have these electric motors, and you can creep along going 5 miles an hour or less and not have your gas engine turn on at all. Mm. I mean, that's why hybrids are so good when you live in crowded areas like the tri-state area. So I think that's a consideration, and certainly for me, those cars have never let me down. They're pleasurable driving experiences, and I would, you know, I would encourage people that might not think about one of these. And again, they're sedans. I mean, the U.S. manufacturers have basically walked away from just cars. It's all SUVs and pickup trucks. So,
you want the sedan? Go with that. Okay. What happened with? I'm going to go like some brand names that I think are fascinating. Okay, ready for my highly unscientific process? Ready? What happened to Volvo? Everybody seems to have a problem with their Volvo.
Volvos have never been the top of Consumer Reports reliability surveys. Not ever, ever, ever. Now, they're not also the worst out there. Volvo, yeah, well, they're not. I mean, they're still going to be better than stuff from Chrysler and Jeep and Dodge. And we mentioned Rivian. That they're still the lower ranks of reliability. Volvo, I think, got a little lost. I think they went high tech with their interiors, but they produced the center screens that were super confusing to use. They really pushed hard for electrification, whether it's plug-in hybrids or all EVs. But they got away from some of the basics that put them on the map, which was, you know, strong, functional, comfortable cars that were good with families. Their old, you know, XC70 wagon was fantastic. They went a little bit more upscale with their XC90, but they were one of the manufacturers that were going to be all EV somewhere in the near future. And I'm pretty sure that they're scaling that back. But if you buy a Volvo and it's out of warranty, your cost of ownership is probably going to be pretty high.
Mm. I just wanted to, full disclosure, I think I owned a Volvo 850 in the 90s, and it was a stick shift.
It was their first front-wheel drive car.
Yeah, I remember owning that, and I did feel safe in it. I don't remember what happened to it. Okay, let us move on. So you mentioned Jeep, and we see Jeep Wranglers on the road. People love them, but aren't I drove one. I couldn't believe how bad it drove. I just couldn't. And people love them. They love them because they're fun and they're great beach, mountainy, fun cars, and you feel cool in it, basically. Yeah.
That is, you could work for Consumer Reports. You just defined the Jeep Wrangler.
Yeah.
It is fun. And when it's warm out and people have canvas tops and they throw the top back and these Wranglers, you can take the doors off.
Yeah.
Driving around without doors at the top. I mean, it is fun. Would I want to just kind of like tool around the Hamptons in a Wrangler? Yeah, that would be fun. Would I want to commute in it? Oh, heck no. I mean, the Wrangler has a terrible ride. It's super noisy. It's a real challenge to get in and out of when the top is up. Mm. It's terrible on gas. It doesn't handle well. It's a really wonky car to drive as a car. But, you know, as kind of a toy, when you're, I mean, like your Mini Cooper, you say you have like 10,000 miles on it or something like that?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're only driving that once in a while. So the downsides of a vehicle like that, you're not living with on a day-to-day basis.
Yes.
My caution is when people are buying their first new car after college, they're like, I want a Wrangler, and I have a 50-mile commute every day. That is like, I'd rethink that.
By the way, the Mini Cooper that we own, and you know, we do try to drive it. You cannot, there is a blind spot like nobody's business in that car. So in the top is down, it's great. Top is up, you're screwed. Okay, next car. So let's talk, remember we were doing a webinar once and someone asked about a Land Rover, Range Rover. Is that still a brand that you think is, even though it's quite popular among a certain set, to be avoided? Piss them off. Come on, you're going out right now.
Hey, no, I don't pull punches with you. I never pull punches.
No.
It's a mistake if you like to drive your cars a long time. Because, like a lot of European cars, once the warranty is over, you will empty your bank account just doing regular maintenance. All right. But if you are only looking to have it for 3 years, you sign a three-year lease, mm-hmm. that's usually the extent of the warranty. The lease is up, the warranty is up, you walk away. That is the only way I would ever, you know, own a Land Rover is to lease it. And I would also make sure I had another car in my arsenal to drive when it was in the shop. They don't have a very good reputation for holding together well in Consumer Reports surveys. They are elegant, they are cool, they certainly still are a status symbol, they're terrible on gas. And they cost a lot of money to own, so you just I'm not saying don't buy it, but go into every car purchase with your eyes open, knowing exactly what the downside is, either of that model or that manufacturer.
You know, I always say to make smart financial decisions, so let me ask you this. What exactly is that old car in your driveway doing for you right now? Seriously, is it an extra car nobody drives anymore? Maybe it doesn't run. Do you keep saying you'll sell it one weekend and suddenly it's been 2 years? Meanwhile, it's taking up space, costing you money, and slowly becoming part of the landscape. Here's the easy solution. Donate it to Cars for Kids. And yes, it's that Cars for Kids. The one with the jingle you absolutely know already. 1-877 Cars for Kids. Here's why people love to donate to Cars for Kids. It's ridiculously simple. You go to carsforkids.org/Jill. That's cars with a K. Answer a few simple questions and you're done. They'll come pick up the vehicle for free, tow it away, handle the paperwork, and you'll receive a tax-deductible receipt. Done. Cars for Kids has been doing this for over 30 years and has accepted more than 1 million vehicle donations. So if you've got a car you're not using, turn it into something meaningful. Go to carsforkids.org/Jill. That's cars with a K. And fair warning, now that jingle is going to be stuck in your head for the rest of the day. If you grew up in a household where money was taboo or stress-inducing, that might leave you pretty at sea when you first start managing your own finances as an adult. Enter Monarch. Monarch completely changes the narrative by providing you with a clear picture of your financial health. Instead of just showing you what you've already spent, Monarch actually helps you plan ahead, map out big goals, and make sure you're staying on track before the month ends. The game changer is their AI assistant, where you can literally ask it questions like, how much did I spend on dining out last month? Or can I afford this trip? You'll get an instant clear answer, and it even sends you an AI weekly recap to flag spending spikes and net worth shifts so you can catch issues early. Using Monarch can feel like having a personal financial advisor right in your pocket. Write your own money story with Monarch. Use code JILLONMONEY at monarch.com to get your first year of Monarch Core half off at just $50. That's 50% off your first year at monarch.com with code JILLONMONEY.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
So what other models? I mean, I'm saying like you can get a clunker anytime. And I think that everybody understands that. You can just be unlucky with a car, right? It's unlikely that's going to happen if you own a Toyota, but sure, I'm sure that there's people who are like, I got a bummer. So any other brands that you just want to throw on our radar screens, except I think I asked you about this once. It's like that weird car that I see in the city, TLC car that I never heard of before. Like the they have Ubers and it's a, what was it? What is that called?
It's a Fisker.
Yes. Like, what's going on with that? What is happening?
They are basically gone out of business.
Uh-huh.
But there's a company, I don't even know the name, the company in New York City that bought, like, all of them and are using them as taxis.
Okay.
And there's one guy, like, in the New York, New Jersey area that is an expert at fixing them. Oof. And sourcing parts and whatnot. And, you know, Fisker was another startup that it's really hard to start a car company from scratch.
Yeah.
Tesla is the only new one in the last almost, you know, 50 years, 100 years, whatever, that's been able to survive. So if some of your entrepreneurial friends like, we're going to start a car company, it's going to be called the Jill on Money car. And, you know, you're just like, oh wow. I hope you have unlimited amounts of money because you're going to be losing money for years and years and years. So, yeah, it was Fisker. We bought one almost as soon as we got done testing. The company declared bankruptcy. So we were like, wow, that was a lot of money spent on a test car that we'll never get back.
Polestar. What about Polestar, Mike?
Polestar is an offshoot of Volvo. Believe it or not, you talked about Volvo. They also are on pretty shaky grounds. Polestars have not done well in Consumer Reports testing. Again, really weird controls, really tough to figure out. Not a great ride, super fast, like a lot of EVs, but not really a pleasurable car to own. You know, Polestar is – Volvo's owned by, I think, an Indian company called Tata, I think.
Yes.
They've put a lot of money into Volvo and Land Rover. Actually, they own them too, but I'm not sure the sales are being commensurate with their investment. So we'll see. I've not heard hide nor hair whether or not they're going to be still viable in the United States. I know that Polestar doesn't have much of a product line, if any. So if you're thinking EV, I would go with more of the more well known brands than taking a risk. And also, if another car, if the Jill on Money car gets produced next week, don't be an early adopter. Okay, you spend more, and they haven't worked out the reliability bugs. The first people that bought the Rivians are like, hats off to you guys, but I don't think I would dive into that.
Okay, let's have fun, because Mike Quincy, who actually has to continue his day job for a few more minutes, you love a sports car, you do. And you probably are the kind of guy who's driven a Ferrari or a Maserati, right? So let's say that most mortals are never going to be able to afford that. And they want to have a, you know, midlife crisis or retirement party or fun car. What's the sports car that they should look at? What, like when Mark is, you know, when I drive him crazy and he's like, all right, I will become a Mark car. No, like, but what is a fun car? Used to be like the Mazda Miata or like, so is what's there for people to just have fun with?
Miata is still the answer. Mm-hmm. Miatas are fantastic. Everyone in my household loves Miatas. My oldest son is pushing hard to get one because it's front engine rear wheel drive. It's one of the best manual transmission shifters in the business. Some of the best transmissions I've ever driven were in Miatas. You can't go wrong with a Miata because they're super reliable and they're actually even pretty fuel efficient. They're tiny, they're really low to the ground, they're noisy, and they have a tough ride. Now, if my son were standing over my shoulder, he would probably say, Dad, you're a wimp. And I'm like, no, I'm 63 years old.
Yeah.
And I like driving the Miatas, but I don't think I want to daily drive it. For a bit more comfort, I would definitely look at the current Ford Mustang GT. Mm-hmm. The V8 is sweet. It sings a great song. You can still get a manual transmission. And lo and behold, it's pretty comfortable. It has a nice ride. The seats are good. I love the Mustang. I would drive that every day except for the snow. Another one to consider is Nissan has brought back the Z. This is a really hot two-seater sports car. It'll remind people of how magical the Zs were in the 1970s. I would definitely check that out. But if you are thinking about retirement, you might be thinking a little bit more on the comfort side. Mm-hmm. So think about, is this going to be a play, like a toy, a weekend thing? Or is this going to be the car that you drive every day, everywhere? Because that would affect my decision which sports car to go with.
Okay. Also, the way I get into people's sports cars, I totally sound like my grandfather. Like I get in, but then I get out and I go, oy! Like to get out, oy! It's a long way down for this 5'10 lady.
If you're practicing your yoga, it's not as bad.
Okay? Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I guess the other question I have is that, you know, in the past, you have said that one of the most unsexy, great things out there on the road is the minivan. Does the minivan still exist? Is it still something that family should look at?
So there's this industry expression that is X number of days supply on dealer lots. It's how it's how the auto industry describes how cars are selling. And minivans, especially the Toyota Sienna, have one of the shortest day supplies on dealer lots.
Really?
The Sienna got real popular the last couple of years. And I'm not saying it's because I'm telling all the young families out there, forget an SUV, get a minivan. I love minivans. I love the Sienna because it is comfortable. It has a 650-mile cruising range. It's insane. It holds my bike. It holds all the stuff that I'm hauling around for my wife and her business. I think the Sienna is fantastic. Even if you don't have kids, it's fantastic. Honda's still selling the Odyssey. Hyundai sells its Kia, the Carnival. Also has a hybrid version, which really did well in Consumer Reports testing. I think minivans are fantastic. I think they're underrated. I think families should forget about SUVs and go check out a minivan. Mm. You won't regret it.
Okay, ready for the... Look at this. You can just see how coastal focused I am because I waited till the last question to ask you about pickup trucks, which Americans love. And isn't it the number one cars? Like, you know, whatever. Whatever they are, Dodge, whatever Ford.
The Ford F-150, the Chevrolet Silverado, and the Ram 1500 are always among like the top five selling vehicles year in and year out in the United States.
Okay, which one should people buy if we have our listeners and viewers who can actually justify, hey, I am in construction. I do need a pickup truck. Not like I am carting two kids off to school, but like you need a pickup truck. We've already proven that most people don't, but let's say you need it or you want it. Which one do you buy?
Hats off to the Ford F-150. They had some reliability issues in the last couple of years. They went back to the drawing board and fixed a lot of stuff. The reliability improved to the point where the F-150 is a Consumer Reports top pick. Mm-hmm. I really like get that. We're talking about hybrids. The Ford F-150 Hybrid is one of my favorite trucks of all time because it is super comfortable. You've got a great, again, I sound like a broken record, but it's all about the cruising range. And the F-150 Hybrid delivers that in spades. It doesn't have the V8 sound. I mean, I love a small block Chevy V8 in the Silverado. I love the way the Ram Hemi V8 sounds. So you're not getting kind of that visceral experience with the F-150 Hybrid. But in terms of day-to-day livability, reliability, check out the Ford F-150. I recommend it without hesitation. I think it's one of the best things that all the American companies make.
That's so cool. I love that. Okay. So to wrap up, Mike, here you are. You're coming to the end of your multi-decade career, 34 years in. Would it be fair to say that we are among, again, not a Consumer Reports top pick, but a Mike Quincy top pick, among the top podcast, radio show, YouTube shows that you've ever appeared on throughout your tenure? Would you say among? You don't even go the top, but if you want to, you can.
When I tell people that I'm talking to a big shot at CBS, they're all really impressed. And then
they say, how did you get to talk to Gail King?
I met Gail King once when I was on CBS This Morning, which was actually pretty cool. You and Mark and your association with CBS, top-notch organization. I love talking to you all the time. You have my cell phone number. You can text me anytime you guys want to get some car advice. I'm not very far away. It's been my pleasure to talk cars with you for all these years, and I guess I'm always looking for an excuse to keep doing it.
Well, we're going to keep coming back at you. So, Mark, make sure you have his personal email address. Mike Quincy, Consumer Reports, great friend of the program. Thank you so much for joining us. If you have a question about your car, about getting a new one, we're going to have Mike's info. We're happy to take your questions, send them off to him. And if you have a question about your personal financial life or anything else going on, just go to JillOnMoney.com, click the Contact Us button, write us a note. It is Labor Day. We always ask that you do something nice for someone else today, any day. Don't worry, we're here for you. Change your work, change your wealth, change your life. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Your line just went down. Production stopped. A supervisor wants answers. And someone's digging through a binder for the maintenance history. Every one of those minutes costs money. And most of the time, that breakdown could have been prevented. That's where MaintainX comes in. MaintainX catches the failure before it happens. Preventative maintenance plans on every key asset to improve reliability. Work orders assigned and tracked right from your phone. Everyone from the floor to the front office is in the loop. Companies on MaintainX have cut unplanned downtime by over 30% and saved thousands on parts and labor every year. See what MaintainX can do for your operation. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
G'day, I'm Justin Wolfers, host of the Platypus Economics Podcast. If there's one thing I've learned from a career teaching economics, it's that your life is shaped by economic currents you'll never see. A single price tag can explain things 1,000 experts can't. People who understand economics, they make better decisions in their careers, their finances, their relationships, and their communities, and I want that for you. Listen to and follow Platypus Economics, available now wherever you get your podcasts.